Yeah. If we don't get the PowerPoint to work, it's no big deal. Okay. So, good afternoon. This is Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission. We're gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for an informal hearing on case number PU-15-703, MDU Company, Division of MDU Resources, Renewable Resource Cost Recovery, Tariff and Rates, informal hearing. I don't have any opening comments other than to say we've been doing a lot with riders today. I think we had 5 or 6 different items on our agenda, and plus this informal. So this is a really good opportunity to dig in and see what you guys are talking about and proposing here, and I look forward to having this kind of informal discussion of this issue. So I'll turn it to Randy and then Brian, whose portfolio it is.
I have no opening comments.
All right. Okay.
But thanks for the opportunity.
In case you wanted to pontificate about something.
Yes. thank you, Madam Chair. Just add on to your comments also this morning with the Commission. And I'm sure you folks are tracking it. Filed our comments with FERC supporting the settlement agreement. And I think that your transmission rider was approved today too, wasn't it? I think so. Or did we set the hearing for it? We set the hearing for the So we've got a lot of stuff going on with you guys right now, but I'd, as Julie said, look forward to the presentation and the staff recommendation.
Ready?
Yes, so I guess the floor is yours.
Thank you, Commissioners. Let me begin with just introducing, I think you know everybody at the table, but just for the record, we have Travis Jacobson at the end of the table, our president, Nicole Cavisto, Darcy Nigam, who will be participating in the presentation today, Garrett Singer next to me. I'm Dan Kuntz with MDU Resources, and Tammy Aberle, who will also be participating in the presentation. As you know, this is Dakota's application for a renewable resource cost or implementation of a rider, including a cost adjustment for its Thunder Spirit wind project, which is, Darcy will explain, is coming along nicely and will be in commercial operation here shortly. So we want to get this in place so it can kind of correspond with the commercial operation of that wind farm. We have a presentation today, a PowerPoint presentation. The slides are in front of you. Tammy and Darcy will be going through that presentation. As well as I understand, we have a tentative settlement agreement with staff on this matter, and Tammy will briefly describe at the end, after following the presentation, kind of outline the tentative settlement agreement with advocacy staff and probably point out some of the variances from the application to the settlement agreement. So with that, I turn to Tammy and let her begin the presentation.
Thank you, Commissioners. So as Dan mentioned, that we did file a renewable rider identified as a renewable resource cost adjustment, rate 55 tariff. And we also proposed rates along with that proposed new tariff to recover the cost of the Thunder Spirit Wind Project. So the tariff would provide for recovery of additions to or new generation, renewable generation, as approved by the Commission. It's similar to a tariff others have in place, the renewable tariff, and actually very similar to our generation rider, but this is specific to a renewable resource. At this time, I'm just going to turn it over to Darcy to give you an update on the project.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Just a little update on the project. I think this Commission is well aware. The Thunder Spirit Wind Project is a 107-megawatt wind project located in Adams County near Headinger, North Dakota. This project has received both an advanced determination of prudency and certificate of public inconvenience and necessity from this commission on June 30th of this year. Also, I think before the commission, and we're expecting the approval of, is the transfer of the certificate of site compatibility for the project, or the siting permit that was with Thunder Spirit Wind, which would be transferred to Montana, Dakota. We're anticipating that to be happening soon.
We did it today.
Done.
Okay. Good. That's one that's done.
That's December 16th. All right.
And also, the purchase of the Thunder Spirit Wind Project from Elite Clean Energy was approved by FERC through a FERC 203 filing we had to make that was back in October.
I didn't understand why they have to approve that.
It ends up being one of those approvals for under the market-based rate authority, so you don't have market control through mergers, acquisitions. And so it's just more of a or formality to make sure that we're not creating some market share.
FERC has authority to on generation and transmission resources under the Federal Power Act. So this is part of their jurisdiction that they exercise. Now, it's a pretty cursory application. I haven't much involved with it, but it would have given the opportunity for somebody would have had, been opposed to it, would have provided an opportunity for that application.
So if he chose to sell a coal plant, it'd be the same thing? Coal generation?
I don't know, but I think so.
Mm-hmm. To another utility, yes.
Mm, I didn't know that. Okay. So that's two things I learned in 2016.
On the next slide, the project consists of 43 2.5-megawatt turbines.
I can teach you a few more.
All of the transmission interconnection work was completed as of the beginning of October. All the turbine structures are in place. Currently, there are 30 turbines remaining still to be commissioned. About half of those are in various stages, and probably about half of the remaining 13 should be commissioned by the end of this week still, early next week. Right now, we aren't seeing any reason why all the turbines won't be commissioned by the end of the year. This project, I think, is certainly on schedule with what we had forecasted for the end of the year. We're looking to complete our transaction with Elite Clean Energy for the purchase of the project by the end of the year as well. And total cost of this project is still in the $220 million range.
What do you mean by commissioned? Does that mean they're tested and running, or does that mean the concrete's poured? Or?
So the commissioning is that everything is completed, erected, so all the foundations are done, the turbines are assembled, wire, all of the checkouts, and safety commissioning work is complete on the turbines, so they're ready to start producing.
Okay.
So we should have production out of all the turbines by the end of the year.
Do you have to get final approval when you start producing electricity from somebody, or you just do it?
So
just the grid, I suppose, huh?
We produce under the generator interconnection, so MISO is aware of it. And then also, we're the market participant for the project even prior to acquisition, so we just, take care of all the scheduling and market.
Start bidding it in and doing whatever. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But 30 of them are operating, and you're already getting power from
yes.
them.
The next few slides are just a couple photos. I think everyone is probably most excited just of the certainly the great photos as far as the equipment arriving. So at least you see the Port of Duluth. Those are all tower sections coming in. So there were 5 or 7 vessels that came in and brought all the equipment. You see what's on the deck. There was also equipment below deck as well on these vessels. The next slide actually.
So how many towers can fit on a vessel?
I think.
Or is it just certain components of them?
There were certain components, how they were stacked out. Each tower actually takes 4 sections. So what you're seeing is individual sections there. So you end up with 160 tubes.
And where did they come from?
The tower sections themselves came from Indonesia or Korea is where they came from. And the blades on the next slide.
Are there no American, stateside manufacturers of this stuff?
There is. But when the orders were placed for this, all of the domestic production for 2015 was secured. So then it's just what's left on a worldwide basis. So the initial intent, if it was available, would have been to find manufacturing slots, in the U.S. The blades on the next one, they either came from Spain or they came from Poland is where they came from. The next slide that you end up seeing is a turbine that's being erected. These are 80-meter towers, so similar to the 1.5, GE units that have been put up and that MDU owns. The blade diameters on these are quite large, so it's 100 meters in diameter. So if you're 80 meters from the top, you're hanging down 50 meters, so you got 30 meters of ground clearance.
Pretty impressive to see.
Yep.
And these are 2.5 megawatts, like you just said. So mm-hmm. Do we have any of those? You guys don't have any of these in production, obviously.
We do not.
No.
Jerry, this is it?
I think so. I don't know of any
other 2.5s. Doesn't Bison have 2.5s?
They got the 3.0s.
3.0s.
They might have some 2.5s on their Bison Man project.
Mm-hmm.
And then they shifted to the ones without the gearboxes.
Somebody Photoshop this sky because that's unreal.
Beautiful skies in here.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. Just like the green grass in the fields on the next one. So. But that's just a picture of the turbines, and you can see that there are turbines that are out there, and there's no crane, so these are all erected. So they actually finished erecting all the turbines. I think it was the first part of November is when the last turbine was erected.
If you have other questions about the project, we'll move on to the more boring number slides. Not quite as fun as those amazing pictures. And it's an amazing site. And we had the opportunity to travel with some of your staff, and it truly is an amazing site out there to see. The pictures don't do them justice in terms of how big they really are. But
Jack, did you go down to that? Is that when you guys got lost in that farmstead I heard
well,
about?
We had a couple issues. A couple issues. Yes.
That's boring. You got
it might have appeared like we bailed on them, but we really did.
I heard the after action of that
It
story.
Might have appeared that way. But right. We did not.
We're glad something came up that day.
I know. It was in Victor's other tour, his hometown tour. So what the slides, these next few slides, are based on what we submitted to the commission in October. So the proposed Renewable Resource Cost Adjustment, or RRCA, reflects a revenue requirement of approximately $15.4 million. So that is essentially the $220 million as allocated to North Dakota share of that investment. The charges per customer class, we're proposing to assess this on a per kilowatt hour basis, and those charges are shown there. So for the residential class, 0.79 cents per kilowatt hour.
What is that based on, Tammy?
That we use an energy allocator. So it's the total revenue requirement of $15.4 million divided over our projected 2016 sales. So those are the charges that would be necessary to recover that annual revenue requirement.
And then just help me understand how it ties to the rates that the regular electric rates that people are paying, this formula.
It would be, because this is an energy resource, we primarily look at it as a energy resource. We're recovering it on energy. So that would be, within a rate case, you'll see a number of different allocations done, as we looked at in the gas case, if we look at a class cost of service study. But this would be how we would recover a similar asset in rates. And it would be how we recover Cedar Hills.
Is it based on a class cost of service study?
Do
you divide it out?
It is, but it's really one allocator, and that is energy.
Okay.
And so it would be similar to how Cedar Hills and Diamond Willow would have been allocated in the rate case.
It would have been the same flow through the PPA if it had been purchased.
If it would have been a PPA, it would have been the same way on a per kilowatt hour basis, yes.
Tammy, can you educate me again? I know we went through this for the ADP, but the what's the life cycle that you figure for this wind farm, and then when it depreciates out, then what zeros out again? Because it should, when this depreciates out, then we should be making money in this bugger, right?
Yeah, it. We've assumed a 20-year life on the wind project, as we have with all of our wind projects.
So 20 years from now, the suppose we're all sitting here, do those numbers zero out minus your maintenance charges?
If no other investments are made to that wind farm, that is what would happen. But typically there are other ongoing investments. But if nothing else were done and we continue to operate the wind and all we needed to do was operate and maintain it, we'd see the return component on the rate base drop off.
Can we adjust the depreciation? Can you guys adjust the depreciation rate one way or the other as we get into this? If it looks like it's going to go 30 years and we want to push it out a little bit, or if you want to do it earlier?
We do depreciation studies on an ongoing basis, and it's not unusual to change the life of an investment. I mean, I think Darcy would agree these, relatively new and with the 2.5 megawatt units, that certainly can change as we move forward.
Okay.
Yes, and I mean that is the advantage of the rider for reason.
Unless you start adding more wind in there, of course, right?
Or, yeah. So under this,
but what was the total amount? $220 million, the purchase price.
The total investment, yes.
And for 1 year, North Dakota's share is $15 million. That's what's North Dakota's total share of the 220?
It would be approximately 72%.
72%. Okay. Mm-hmm.
152. So with this wind, as soon as that wind is online in total, and as Darcy mentioned, it's already producing energy, but there will come with the wind farm a reduction in fuel costs. It'll offset other fuel. It's either going to offset MISO purchases or other fuel. And so the net impact to a customer would be about $3.14 a month. Net of those fuel costs, because those fuel cost savings would flow, they'll flow automatically, start accruing, if you will, January 1. So as soon as that is fully in production and producing energy, as we file our fuel cost adjustments, those savings will show in that fuel cost adjustment line to customers. So we're looking at the net effect because they will see fuel savings.
So if you were to, and I know this is a big if, but if you were to go to MISO and purchase this power instead of owning this, what would you be looking at? You know, how would that affect residential customers? Is there any way to know that in terms of, because it's sort of hard to say, here we've got, you know, we're increasing your rates, but it would, I'd like to be able to say, but this is the cheapest way we could do it, or one of the least expensive ways we could do it. But I'd need to know that, like what you'd be looking at.
I think we looked, you know, through the ADP, we looked at all those alternative resources. And,
So we had done that as part of the ADP hearing itself. The one number I remember that sticks out was at least we had talked, again, we look for savings over the entire life of the project. So over its 20-year life, you know, at least between the power purchase agreement, which we had signed, and the ownership, had about a $30 million savings over the life of the project to the customer. The other one, if we would have taken a look at to not having any wind and just relying on MISO purchases, it's an even larger savings. And I think it was somewhere in the $50 to $70 million range over the life of the project versus what, you know, forecasted MISO costs were.
Say that again, how much, Darcy?
I think it's in the 50 to 70 over MISO, and the ownership option was like $30 million cheaper as compared to the power purchase agreement option that we have. So
the question I was going to ask, too, about that is, I appreciate those numbers, what do you figure for decommissioning costs in this? Because we're going to have a discussion amongst the three of us on decommissioning of wind farms this next legislative session, and what do you figure in that cost of $200 million for decommissioning, and how is that getting pulled into these? Or will that be at some point you'll come back in front of us to decommission this bugger?
So part of that, when the cost of decommissioning comes, you know, we remove the projects, the foundation's at least 4 feet below grade. I think the estimated cost for that, I think, is around $1.5 million is where it is. And then ultimately there's some offset to that through salvage, at least for equipment. So, you know.
Well, you follow the discussion we've had about wind farm decommissioning, I'm sure, but it's been a very fluid number, what it costs to decommission these buggers, and we're just now getting into the 10-year life of financial assurances and investor owns. We haven't crossed that bridge yet, but it's something to surely think about how you're getting those numbers, because we're going to have a discussion about whether we should move that 10 years to 5 years or immediately, or, you know, like when you take a power line, take that down, you come back in for what that costs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or a power plant the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. When do you start including that in the rates? Is it already in there? So you're building up a fund to support decommissioning?
No, we have not. Typically, that would come through, you know, we would include decommissioning as part of our depreciation. We have not for this investment. There are no decommissioning costs included.
But that could happen. The next depreciation study, as you go out there,
and we continue to evaluate those.
Maybe rolled into your life of your plan. and depreciation would be covered.
Right.
By the time you retire, that would be your opportunity as you go forward and look at your depreciation studies. Mm-hmm.
Well, whatever you can come up with that discussion as we go down the road will be helpful, because that the wind industry is at a big crossroads right now with the Clean Power Plan. I mean, if we've 2,000 megawatts is what we have now, if all of a sudden we end up with 8,000 megawatts, that's what the decommissioning discussion is, I think, filtering becomes bigger for us, because we don't want a bunch of wind turbines littering the sky or the landscape in 20 years either. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so concerned about it, MDU walking away. But whatever parameters we set for other companies, you would have to apply to, or unless we carved it out, I guess. But does Montana have anything different on this, or I guess you don't have any wind farms over there, so?
We do.
We do.
Yep. Diamond Willow.
Oh, sure, half and half, Cedar Hills.
Montana, yes.
What are their decommissioning rules like over there?
They have, to my knowledge, they do not have any rules specific to decommissioning. Included.
Sort of not surprising from a state that didn't used to have speed limits. Yeah, Tammy's like,
I won't say anything else. So, as I noted, these are the net savings. And the other thing I know that was
last,
quite
one,
a bit.
One dead horse, one more time.
Okay.
Speaking of me personally, I wouldn't be against you guys starting to put something in your cost annually on wind farms. It's a different animal than a power plant. So
for depreciation.
For reclamation, decommissioning. I would not be against that. And even if we don't know exactly what the number is, mm-hmm. it's a cost of doing business, and we can deal with it annually instead of at some point in time where we have to decommission 10 wind farms and there's this gargantuan rate impact. Pull it a little bit now.
We'll certainly look at that as we go through that next study phase, which I said is really ongoing.
I had the same discussion with Excel too. Now that they got Border Winds and Courtney that are in their queue too.
Yeah. Okay, I appreciate that. But I think, as we noted, it really provides a long-term hedge to that MISO energy as well. It's a fairly known quantity as to what that price will be. So over the long term, as those significant savings Darcy mentioned, is what this wind facility really provides for us, for our customers. Again, just a few more numbers here. Just what the average rate base is. We look at that average investment from a beginning and year-end average. We have included the federal production tax credits. Of course, that's a significant benefit to the project. I do want to note...
Those, or is that taken off of the purchase price?
Well, this will be an ownership, so... It would be flow to us. Do want to note that based on our projections at this point in time, we would not have taxable income sufficient to take those PTCs in 2016. We have reflected the tax credits in the development of the revenue requirement with an adder in the rate base, regulatory asset, if you will, saying, we need to provide a cost recovery of the cost of money. So the customer gets the benefit, but there is a return component in the investment piece of this to reflect that PTC amount over this period in the rider. So again, another significant benefit of the rider is that we will obviously know much more after the fact or as we move forward, and we can true that up in the rider. But at this point in time, our taxable income was not sufficient to take the credit, so it'll carry forward.
But you do expect people to have tax.
Yes. So we carried it forward. Yes. So we reflected it, but with the regulatory asset included to just reflect that carry forward.
Mm-hmm. How long do you get production tax credits for this?
10.
You're able to earn them for 10 years?
10 years. Yep.
10 years. They're always the same.
Yes.
That amount times
it's always the production, but the value of the tax credits can be adjusted from year to year. So we've seen that, at least, they've been moving from like 1.9 cents where you were 10 years ago now to this 2.3 cents.
And so, I don't know how much of it you can use in 2000, or expect to use in 2016. Do you have to get that used up within 10 years, or do they carry forward forever until you have
a... You carry forward an additional 10.
10 years.
Yep.
Yep. We'd expect that we'd be able to take it. What's caused us not being able to take it the 16 points depreciation? Because of all of our investments and the magnitude of these investments, we wiped out all kinds of money. So that's what caused them. That's not being able to utilize the PTCs to mm-hmm. But we expect those by 2017.
So you'll accumulate them for 10 years and you have 20 really to use them.
And so that also affected the North Dakota ITC. So that we were not able to
not using any of that.
Utilize that in 2016 either. So the last bullet there was that the overall return reflected our authorized return of 10.75. The estimated annual O&M is about $2.1 million. So we included depreciation again over that 20-year life. And the taxes or the production taxes are based on North Dakota's wind generation tax, which is also a benefit to the customers. And just as we're, you know, and we talk about looking at riders and what do all these riders equate to in terms of what we expect for the year, we're putting out we're fairly late in the year here, that's obvious, but there are a lot of year-end adjustments that occur at this point in time. Our projected 2015 return for North Dakota Electric, and this is an ROE, would be about 7.4. We looked at projected 16. Now that projected 16, we've included everything that we've asked for, essentially. As you noted, we actually have two other rider adjustments pending in front of you, the generation rider and a transmission rider. So this reflects the investments and also, at this point, assumes recovery. And that's our projected 2016 return on equity. As we mentioned.
So, I'm sorry to go back a little bit, but on the operating and maintenance expenses, you estimate about $2 million. Is that going to be typical each year? Do you expect that
yes,
to be about
we
what
do.
It is?
Okay. I mean, most of it's
what's
under contract.
That make up?
So the first, it's actually set for 5 years. The first 2 years are at a lesser rate because there's a bumper-to-bumper maintenance warranty.
Oh.
So then it ends up picking up for the consumables and some of those parts after the first 2 years. So we will see a change from year two to three, but at least the maintenance cost with the turbine supplier is fixed for 5 years.
And what's that? What's the breakdown, just in ballpark figures of what, like salaries and, you know, that $2 million? I'm curious what the costs are.
So we end up paying on a per-turbine basis for the turbine supply. So this project, the maintenance is going to be provided by Nordex, who's the turbine provider. So they'll have four technicians and one supervisor out there. You know, we're not responsible for their salaries, so we just pay a fixed amount just on a per-turbine basis is what we'll end up seeing. And then we have two folks as well, MDU folks, a supervisor and a wind tech as well, to maintain the balance of plant equipment and all of the landowner easements and agreements that we have.
So that's it? There's like seven employees of this?
Seven employees, yep.
Wow. And you'll have the contractors just for the couple years, and then they'll be your employees?
So it's 5 years, and okay. So then there's an option for a five-year extension after that agreement at a to-be-negotiated price where we could take the O&M services on ourselves. And certainly we would not be prohibited from trying to hire, you know, the folks who are working on the project at the end of the five-year period.
And are they working full-time on this project, or do they serve a bunch of different projects?
So Nordex has a number of projects in the area. There are other project sites closest to ours. There's a couple in Iowa and one over in Colorado. So they can move folks, you know, from project to project as maintenance are needed, but it's anticipated that those five folks will be permanent there. And then as certain preventative maintenance, larger items come in, they will bring other folks from around the country to help.
But those people will likely live in that community or near?
Yep.
Okay.
So $48,000 a year for turbine, so $4,000 a month per turbine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Interesting. Is Chris Johnson still down there for you guys?
Chris Johnson is in Rain. He's at Cedar Hills, yes.
So those guys, do you share any of those resources?
We can, and so we've had Chris come over a couple times already just to become familiar with the project, and certainly we could use folks, that, our folks at Thunder Spirit, to go over to Cedar Hills as well if needed.
I'm sorry, I got to step back with a really elementary couple questions here on this, because something's just not registering. At the end of 20 years, do you expect to have, that this is going to have a significant value on your books then? Or has it depreciated out and it's
mostly
aiming at zero?
At the end of 20.
If we don't invest further.
Okay, so right now you're supplying your customers with power, and some of it you're producing yourself, and some of it you're buying from MISO. And now you found a cheaper source of providing the power, some of it. And so you're going to be able to eliminate some MISO purchases that were more expensive. But in order to do that, we have to raise their rates. We should be able to lower their rates.
Because this is cheaper. Confused by that, too.
I mean, I could see it if at the end you were going to have a big asset on the books that you were building up to, but we're never getting anything toward the end. So it just seems like we're being sold that this is a cheaper source. We have to raise the rates to pay
over the life of the project.
Yes.
For the initial years, when the depreciation is higher, it is going to be more expensive. And again, it depends upon what the MISO prices are at the time. I mean, part of this is, you know, a bit of timing. So depending upon what power this is displacing at any given moment, the MISO price may be different. So that plays into it. But in the early life of your project, it will be more expensive than what you would probably be able to buy on the market in those early years.
So this 15.4 million, that's not a, that's not like your house payments where they're figured out.
No, it's not a levelized.
Every year you're going to change it if you keep it in a rider.
Mm-hmm. It'll reduce by that depreciation. Okay, that's what.
Yeah.
And maybe I said that.
Depreciation goes down. So each year it's going down until you get to year 20 where theoretically it's zero if you haven't put any more improvements or, you know, haven't had to replace anything or that sort of thing. But theoretically, it would be going down each year until you got to zero, and then if it was still operating after year 20, you wouldn't have any of that return component associated with that project. But that's where you're getting into your depreciation studies. Yeah. If you're out into year 10, and now you've got some experience, you think this plant is going to go 25 years, well, then you adjust those depreciation rates, so instead of going down like this, then it might go out, you know, slower.
Based then on the original projections for maintenance and things such as that, where does the line cross where if everything was estimated perfectly now, in what year do we hit the point where we start lowering their rates?
It's year two.
Really?
Yep. Okay. That's.
No, you lower the $3 to a lesser amount, but
so
they're
what
still
it would offset to what the MISO savings. So that way, from what MISO is projected to be and the revenue requirement for this at the end of year two is where that crossover point is. Just because of the depreciation, and when you take a look at that, and at least the value of the tax.
So
and
you've got
PTC's.
The cost of this going down, and your MISO prices are projected to go up, and what I understand what Darcy's saying, you expect that crossover price to be about year two.
End of year two, as far as on the annual cost difference of either the ownership of this or buying the energy from the market.
Do you have this 15.4, the similar number for each of the 20 years laid out?
It would go down.
No, but do you have the, like,
goes,
is it?
Until year 10 and then year 11 when the tax credits go
tax
away,
credit.
It jumps back up and then it drops again. So it's
and do
like
you have that chart somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that?
Yeah.
Or
I think we provided something similar.
It seems like I've seen that now. You mentioned that part about the end of the tax
not
credits.
Bring that filing with.
Mm-hmm.
So we can
yeah,
get
we have
that
it.
Out and
yeah,
get it to you.
Yeah, if
it was
if it's,
part of the either
if it's not
data
confidential,
responses
I'd like
or
no,
part of the
not.
Record. Do you have it?
I have it right here. It's not. You didn't have it. So this is from the ADP. This is the first
10 years. So it doesn't match up to the 15 because this is the net of the revenue requirement and the offset to the fuel cost, which is 5.8 million was what the projection was for year one, which is roughly what we come out to, I believe. Year two, we're better than the market by 2.8 million.
It already flips around in the second year.
And then it grows. I mean, we get up to the point of, in 2025, $16.7 million, better than the market.
I would like to have that with the whole 20, so we see what the tax estimates will be, too.
And so if we hadn't done it this way and had a rider, and you went ahead with the MISO purchases, how would customers be seeing those rate increases?
If we,
how would you be getting that revenue increase?
Through the fuel and purchase power adjustment.
Clause. Okay, fuel
clause. It was a PPA.
Right, so that would be higher. All right.
It would be a direct offset to the company. Since we've already invested in the revenue from that, it would
be a pass-through.
Okay. Yep.
Certainly I've talked to my colleagues about this in the work session, but I'd like to consider including depreciation right away. Decommissioning right away. Because if you're right away at year two that you're breaking even, why wouldn't we put those costs in early? Because it's a cost that MDU customers are going to have at some point in time. Why not put it in a little, maybe not year one, but why not put it, have a plan to put it in early for wind?
Yeah, I think what we can do, you'll see later in this, part of our settlement would maybe be coming up with rate filing here later in the year, and that's something we probably could discuss at that time.
What do you mean a rate filing?
We're going to talk about a settlement that, I mean, we haven't got to it yet, but yeah. So do you want to talk about that now, Tammy? Or?
Yes, and, you know, I think in any event, because this is a rider, you know,
we're gonna
like you said,
it
if it's not
year.
Year one, we can get that in and start that, you know, as we move forward, you know, into year two.
Yeah, the liability.
Go, Mike, Jerry, if you're going to talk.
So as I understand depreciation, you take your original value minus your salvage value and then divide that by the number of years you depreciated over. In this case, our salvage value would be negative because it would include the decommissioning costs of it. So what Brian is asking for will be in the depreciation expense that is in rates from the beginning. If I
make sense, that wasn't what I was asking for because I'm not that smart. But at the end of the day, there's money in there to decommission this thing at some rate that you think is a ballpark, because I think that's reasonable then to put this as a cost that comes in down the road.
What you're saying, though, just salvage value, that doesn't assume that that covers all the decommissioning costs.
But we don't know those costs. It's all guesstimate now, and the industry is all over the board in what we've seen.
But as right you get closer to the end of the life of the project, you'll go back in periodically as you're doing your depreciation studies and update those to determine whether your estimate, whether you've got enough in there for in this case, negative salvage value. So that those will be adjusted as you go along depending upon, you know, new information and what you perceive to be the life of the project.
So what if the commission requires financial assurances at year five of a wind farm?
Well, financial assurances, if you're talking letter of credit, means that that's just another expense that we have to pass on to customers.
Right. Okay.
They're, you know, letters of credit.
Or a bond rating. I mean, you already have that. Rated as a whatever.
But, you know, there's a cost associated with having those in place. So it, you know, becomes another operating expense. Mm-hmm.
And that'll be your testimony downstairs, I'm sure, right? Okay, well, let's just, we meet again next year, December of 2016. If we could flush out this a little bit more, that'd be great. Because we don't even start till January of 2017 with the legislative discussion.
Well that's when the legislature starts, right? But we'll have to have our stuff figured out if we're going to be asking for something different.
And then maybe we'll go to 20 years for non-financial assurances. I don't know.
And we will certainly look further into that.
It isn't really the utilities owners that are the concern. It's any of the smaller companies that might not be here to decommission.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But whatever rules we have, unless we carve it out.
Right.
So as we noted earlier, we've been in settlement discussions with staff. We really have we're talking today about the renewable rider, but as I noted earlier, we have other riders in front of you. So we're going to like looking at the generation rider and renewable as a package, if you will, today we're talking just about the renewable, but I wanted to put that out there. So within those settlement discussions, we have agreed to file a rate case.
Back up, tell me, why are you looking at it as a package? There are two separate cases.
Yes, they are. But for as we noted earlier, I mean, we filed them the same day. Those assets are all going to be in production approximately the same time or the same time. Looked at, okay, there's a renewable rider out there for other investments. We'll utilize that for Thunder Spirit. It made sense to us to include then the Rice units, which are our next units online, expected online end of the year, early next year. And so we included that in our generation rider, which today we're recovering Heskett 3, the turbine that went online in 14. So along the discussion lines is it's probably time to look at a rate case. We have other costs we're not recovering through riders. Right. And AQCS will be online the end of the year, the Big Stone Environmental Project. And as we've discussed over the years, you know, at some point it's good to get that into rates, some of those investments, and stop tracking them. AQCS is a piece of, part of that whole Big Stone plant. It's not the Big Stone plant, so, you know, perhaps bring that into what we call base rates, or, you know, just take a look at rate design, look at a lot of things that we only do in a rate case. We last filed in 2010, or rates went into effect in 2010.
How are you recovering AQCS? How are you?
We have that in the environmental rider.
Okay.
So because we've been recovering construction work in progress, mm-hmm. as that's been under construction, which has been a real value to our customers, or a benefit. Again, it didn't slam in on 1 year. They've been paying for it as we go, if you will. But that will go into, it is near into production, December.
Well, I'm all for cleaning up all the riders in a rate case, but this one.
And at this point in time, I'm not saying we'd put this into a rate case. We're just looking at all of the riders we have out there. How do we best manage that? We've got a lot coming online January 1, and so it's in our best interest and our customers to get them paying for it. Otherwise, it's just pushing it down the road. So that's really what started this discussion. There's a few more questions we need to respond to on the generation rider with staff, and we're working with them on that. So, again, just so there's no surprises, that would be our goal, is to look at some sort of an interim approval, and that's what we've suggested here, until we get through that rate case. So we could get the generation rider in place. We can get,
I'm confused. This is getting out of the scope of today's informal, but I'm confused how this is the renewable rider, and I don't know. You're candidly speaking, but this is not affect the generation rider, unless I'm missing how you two have linked, that you guys have linked them.
I think if I can speak, Tammy, there's kind of common components, I think, to both settlement agreements, mm-hmm. or the settlement of both cases. The thing that Tammy's talking about, the rate case, I think is an agreement that's in both of them. So
yes.
They've been kind of talking together, the rates of return and the riders and stuff. So there's kind of common components, even though they're separate cases.
Yes.
So I think, you know, they're going to look a lot the same when you're presented with them.
But the renewable rider should be costs associated with those assets going forward. And
I think the terms of the settlement,
yeah,
it is.
More to it,
10.5 and the, you know, agreement,
okay.
to do a rate,
yeah.
case by 9:30. You're probably going to see similar things potentially.
Part of the settlement is that we're going to lower the return on these projects from 10.75 to 10.5. And then until that return date is settled on, or however it is decided in the rate case.
All right. So the settlement would really provide additional parameters for the riders.
Yes, it would. From,
yeah.
from this point forward.
Yeah. You're not talking about taking all of the costs and lumping them together changing the revenue requirement and all that.
No.
But the terms of 10.5 and agreeing to a rate case, I think the thought was those would be the similar between the.
Yes, and this rider can move along.
Going forward, right, though, this would be a hearing this topic, but why would we do that when we want to renew all the renewable stuff every year? We want to look at that.
And we will. Commissioner, we still will. And this we would
expect and ask that it move forward on its own, and I probably complicated it more than I needed to.
Well, that's what I'm going
by giving a preview. We would want this to move on by itself.
These renewable riders, to me, have been, there's not much discussion on them because you come in with your matter-of-fact costs and there's not much to debate. They're relatively straightforward. They have very, very quick approval rating. Mm-hmm. And so you could look at something that you could have a decision on in January that now you could tie up.
No, we don't want to tie it up. That's why I tried to clarify. We don't want to tie it up. We're all about moving forward.
Right.
This is still its own case. We're not asking to tie it up, wait on the generation at all. I was just giving a preview of how that would potentially move forward.
Now I know why you guys are sitting here.
What we requested, we requested is January 1, and knowing however that works with the meeting schedules, but it is January 1 when this will be in full production, when customers will start seeing the fuel savings. And so the settlement agreement that we have looked at with staff is simply very few changes. We reduced the ROE to 10.5. And we've said that we will look to look at all of our, when we report our earnings, they include all of these riders, and we would look to cap, if you will, of 10.5% on those. So it doesn't change the rider process at all. The rider will still be trued up as it is every year. I want to reiterate, we request approval January 1. Of this rider. If we get to all of the fine points of a settlement, we would expect to submit that today, tomorrow. But again, it would not affect how this rider could move forward on its own.
If I might just throw out there, because I'm sure advisory staff is wondering a little bit, I think it's good what you guys are doing on the settlement, because you're looking at a lower ROE, which reduces some of the costs, and I think the commitment on the rate case is good as well, because I am, growing concerned with the number of riders and the size of them. I mean, these are significant costs for customers to take on, $2, $3, $4 per rider. We scrutinize much smaller amounts than that on a rate case. And so I think it would be good to look at the big picture again and get that going. And if this is kind of an interim step to get us to that point, then that's what we should do. But because you have to get all this stuff together for the rate case, and that takes time. So,
I kind of like to see things blended together too, and yet the flip side of it is I kind of like seeing this stuff as riders for a while, so that people realize why their bill is going up when we lump it all together.
I think you'd still keep the rider. The idea of the rate case is to address a concern, is would you combine all these riders with your regular rates? Are you making too much, not enough? I mean, so you have a chance.
Exactly.
It's 10.5, 10.75. Is that still the right rate of return? Should that be adjusted for the riders?
So interest rates is 11%.
Yeah.
That is the hard thing with riders, is it doesn't give us that big picture on the company's earnings.
So you still have a rider, but you might adjust the rate of return on the rider going forward. So, I mean, I think that's the whole idea. This is to kind of come back and take a look at some of the components that go into the rider. But I think the intent would be that the rider, particularly this renewable rider, would stay in place even after the rate case.
Mm-hmm. And then I don't remember how long the gas rate case took from when you filed it till we completed it. But whatever the time is expected, when you're talking about a rate case by September 30th, are you talking about filing one on September 30th or having one completed?
Filing.
Okay.
So that's where potentially the generation rider would run for a while and then.
Exactly.
Yeah, it may run till we get through that.
We put in the generation rider on an interim basis, so if we decide something differently down the road.
With this new Montana model of no interim rate.
Those legislators took that away, right?
Darn press. So basically it would, as we noted, I guess just a few more numbers to
add to that. It would reduce then that overall impact under the rider that we would request go in January 1, 2016.
January 5th, okay.
Yeah. I saw your schedule, so we can expect that.
There's always something that comes up at the end of the year, isn't there? There's always like a December 30th. Got to have a meeting.
How does that impact you, the difference between something getting completed this month, effective January 1st, as opposed to something getting completed January 5th? Is that a big deal, or is it just the computer just takes care of it? And it
we the computer will do the billing. We don't have to start billing a new rate on the first of a month. It will prorate that in, so we say it's service rendered. So it, you know, there would be some revenues we wouldn't collect if we would have started January 1 versus January 5. But it's not additional work on our part. It's just those 5 days of revenues, because we'll put it in effective January if that would be the approval date. That would start the counter, if you will, as to the number of days under the new rate.
Before I forget, the next PI meeting you guys come in, could you put down a topic of how you plan to someday take down your power lines and someday decommission your coal plants, and just so I get a better understanding of how we do that now? Because I know, like, I remember a case somewhere in there where you guys cleaned up something you had built in western North Dakota that had been there for years, and you filed, and it was like $6 million the commission awarded, and you went out and cleaned up whatever it was you were doing. But just to get a better feel for that.
Yes.
Yeah. To
well, because it's
okay.
It's
mm-hmm. Vic and Jack, are you done, Tammy? Okay. Anything else from MDU? Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Anything?
So just quickly. So, I agree with everything that MDU has kind of put forth here. Outside of a few minor points, we're still clearing up on the settlement agreement we're talking about. We would intend to support the settlement for the renewable rider, you know, the generation rider. We're still working through some numbers on that. Well, I'm hopeful we can come to an agreement on that ultimately, but for the time being, I'm more so looking at this one, since that's why we're here today. So, as Tammy said, hopefully we can get to a final signed version we can file with you later today, if not tomorrow. But I think the couple of points you talked about there are kind of make this a little better flavored for our ratepayers.
Mm-hmm. I've been advocacy staff for about 4 hours now.
You got to have one attorney.
You got a lot to say.
Yeah. But I have looked it over with Vic, and it does seem like something would be agreeable to us.
I think it's more like 2 hours.
2 hours, maybe.
Seems like four.
Working with Vic sometimes makes things go extra slow.
Seems like a lifetime.
You guys were lost longer in your trip to.
Much, much longer.
It got weird.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to that and making a decision on this as soon as possible.
Sounds good.
Okay, do you offer up your discussion today as your testimony on this case?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. Well, I think unless there's any other questions or discussion items, there will be no closing comments. This informal on case number PU-15-703 is adjourned.